can you do me a favor?
Pull up LL Cool J's hat as like a shark spin.
You could do that. But I would prefer at some point you plug in your microphone. I'm afraid I can't reach it now. That sounds better.
I actually think our reviews would improve. I just kept it unplugged.
What's up? This is Movies on Up. What was once in the deep is now in the shallows. What was once and always my co-host is Mr. Dave Bisella.
Yep.
Seated directly across from me in the shallows of his office chair. That's Mr. Dave. I am Ryan.
My mic is like a shark's fin.
We are Movies on Up. What was once in the deep is now in the shallows is now our tagline for this week. If you think you know what movie that comes from, don't think about it too hard because the movie title is the last two words of it. If you can deduce what movie that's from, send
your guess. Take a lively guess.
Very good. Send your guess to us in one of the following ways. You can email us, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can leave your guess on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup. Or tweet your guess at us, @moviesonup, on the Twitter. If you are correct and if we choose you, we will send out a prize package your way. This week, summer is upon us. If there's one thing that encapsulates summer, it is, of course, swimming, whether it is the pool or the ocean. If you are an ocean swimmer, certainly you are at least acutely aware that sharks live there as well. And it seems like every so often, like last year with The Shallows, we get a movie that reminds us that it is not safe, or at least as safe as you think, to go into the water. This week, your 2017 reminder comes from Mandy Moore as she goes 47 meters down, gets stuck in a shark cage, surrounded by some sharks. So it's like The Shallows in the deep, I guess. And that got Dave to thinking about shark movies. And certainly we could have done The Shallows.
I think there's one shark movie that comes to mind when people think of shark movies.
Absolutely. And if you
but
are
we didn't want to do a Jaws episode.
Oh, I was thinking you were actually talking about the movie that we chose. You know, if you have a short memory, maybe your mind goes to The Shallows from last year, which was a decent movie. Blake Lively was pretty good in it. The shark was fine. That was about it, really.
Water was pretty.
Yeah, the water was pretty. That rock, I guess, did a good job of carrying her and most
Isn't
of the movie.
Rock always does.
Absolutely. And of course, there is Jaws, which we mentioned on this podcast a lot for different reasons, perhaps being the grandfather of all summer blockbuster movies. But I guess when it comes to grandfather of shark movies, it doesn't necessarily have to be the first. It just has to be memorable, I suppose. And it doesn't get much more memorable, at least to my co-host, than Rennie Harlan's 1999 masterpiece, Deep Blue Sea, starring Saffron Burroughs, Thomas Jane, LL Cool J, Michael Rapaport, Samuel L. Jackson.
Stellan Skarsgård.
Stellan Skarsgård. And that's most of the cast. Three sharks, a mama.
Three of the genetic ones. There's a couple other ones.
Yes, exactly. Three that are important in terms of the sharknanigans that are going to be happening throughout the movie. This movie, people kind of liked it. It opened to $19 million on July 30th, 1999, which was good for third place. Behind The Blair Witch Project's $29 million and Runaway Bride's $35 million. The Haunting and Inspector Gadget would round out your top five for that week. So, I mean, realistically, not a bad week for horror movies.
I saw four of those movies in the movie theater.
Let's see if I can guess which one you did not see in the movie theater. Was it Runaway Bride?
No, I saw that.
Okay,
twice.
So Inspector Gadget?
Yeah.
All right.
I didn't
it's
have
pretty
kids
obvious
in 99 that I knew about.
Well, I mean, do you know about any of them now since then? Yeah. It's been 20 years. The movie went on to gross $73.6 million domestically, which puts it 994th all-time on the domestic list.
A lot better than I expected.
And we're going to get there, sharks specifically. It's in the top 1,000. It is one spot behind 2006's animated haunted house flick.
Monster House.
Monster House, indeed. And one spot ahead of F. Gary Gray's 2009 Jamie Foxx, Gerard Butler thriller.
Oh, that Law-Abiding Citizen?
Law-Abiding Citizen. It is. Just to put it in context, a movie that tends to be number one on any given list, and I might try and sneak it on my next two lists, in 991st place, Beetlejuice, with just about $73 million. So just a couple spots ahead of Deep Blue Sea. Just because 1,000 is a very round number, and it's pretty close to Deep Blue Sea. One of the bombiest of all the bombs recently that gets referenced a lot is Disney's John Carter, and that is a cool $73 million round 1,000th place. So Deep Blue Sea made more money
than John Carter.
Deep Blue Sea is actually the fifth highest grossing movie featuring sharks that Box Office Mojo wanted to put in there. It is just $307 million behind the leader.
I'd assume Jaws.
You would be wrong. Jaws is second. There's actually a movie featuring a shark. A shark is not necessarily central to the plot, and it's not even necessarily a live-action movie.
Oh, is it Nemo?
It is Finding Nemo.
Oh, that doesn't. It
counts.
No, screw that.
Hey, man,
Jaws.
Argue with Box Office Mojo.
I'm sticking with Jaws.
All right, fine. Jaws is $47 million behind Finding Nemo, but that's $47 million in like 1979.
Yeah, 76 money or whatever.
Yeah, so put it in inflation, it's probably higher anyway. Not that I have the math to back that up. Third place, another animated movie. But it's more sharks.
Is it Shark Tale?
It is Shark Tale.
I didn't.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, with Will Smith.
Yes, $160.8 million. Jaws 2 is fourth.
I was going to guess Jaws 2. Yes. He told me you'd let me guess.
I did, and then I thought, this is taking too long. $81 million. The Shallows from last year is sixth place. Made less money than Deep Blue Sea. $55 million. So that's kind of what, I guess, 47 Leagues has to shoot for. I would say 55 is probably going to be the upper.
Match Shallows, yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure it does.
Oh, I don't think it does.
I think The Shallows was one of those ones that I'm not sure people were super interested in, but then buzz kind of came out. Oh, this is a good movie. Check it out. And people did.
Yeah. And I mean, this summer is not good so far. So, like, I think people are just not going out like they were.
Yeah, that's entirely possible.
And I don't know Mandy Moore. Mandy Moore's second build in this movie behind, I don't even know the Chloe something.
Claire Holt.
Claire Holt.
Claire Holt.
Think I know who that is.
She was on The Vampire Diaries.
Oh, that would explain it.
Yeah, that's about all I've got for her. I believe this movie's been in the can for at least a year. Obviously, Mandy Moore's got a pretty successful TV show on now, so I'm not sure if it's trying to capitalize on that or if it's just a matter of, do we want to release two shark movies with female protagonists in the same year and do that whole, like, Armageddon and what's the other one?
Deep Impact.
Yeah.
Dante's Peak and Volcano.
Right, yeah. Put those two together and one of them gets lost. So for whatever reason, 47 Meters Down comes out this year. Not a lot of shark competition in 1999 with Deep Blue Sea. I guess the movie would be called, like, a action horror movie. I think it does both of those relatively well, or it does both of those things.
It tries to do both.
It tries to do both. That's a good way to put it. Rennie Harlan is a director. You can't argue that he's the most successful Finnish Hollywood director of all time. I think he's got that wrapped up hands down. But I think he's kind of like the perfect director for at least what this movie appears to be trying to go for. He's done action. He's got Cliffhanger, Die Hard 2. He's done horror movies. He did Nightmare on Elm Street, The Dream Warrior, Prison, featuring a young Viggo Mortensen, like before
Dream
Nightmare.
He did Dream Master.
Yes, Dream
featuring
Master.
Featuring Anything by Dramarama.
Indeed. To bring it back around to Rennie Harlan, the man's got his horror pedigree for what it is. He's got his action pedigree. You may not like Die Hard 2 or think that it belongs in the trilogy, but there's a ton of action in it. Cliffhanger's a good action movie for what it is. So you have a movie that is, I want to say, it's equal parts action and equal parts horror.
His resume, he's one of those that my eyes roll when I see Rennie Harlan. But the resume, he makes memorable bad movies. Ford Fairlane, terrible movie. Cliffhanger, Driven. Mindhunters, The Covenant, which is probably one of the worst movies ever made. Like,
was that the dude?
The dude witches. It was like the dude craft.
Right, yeah.
Long Kiss Goodnight.
Dude craft.
Long Kiss Goodnight, the Shane Black one.
Which I like.
Yeah, despite had a good script to work with. That Cutthroat Island, that big Gina Davis pirate, like, flop.
I think that was Matthew Modine, wasn't it?
I thought that was Gina Davis.
Well, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There was a dude in it, too. Dude craft in it.
12 Rounds, the John Cena movie.
Absolutely.
He just did Skip Trace, which broke a bunch of records in China. The Johnny Knoxville, Jackie Chan action movie. Like, he's a terrible director, but he's like just keeps backing into, like, success. Like, and it's so weird.
And he's done movies in pretty large franchises. You have the Nightmare franchise. We mentioned Die Hard.
That's how he started.
He did The Exorcist, The Beginning,
yeah,
which was god-awful. But really, everything post The Exorcist has been god-awful in that franchise, so I don't blame him. But he's a dude that gets relatively high-profile jobs. And of a lot of those ones that we mentioned, Deep Blue Sea's better than The Exorcist.
Yeah. He's like a Sam Worthington of directors, I think.
Is he
or
that
like a
bad?
Jai Courtney of directors, where...
That might be more...
But I like Jai Courtney.
He tries.
Jai Courtney tries. He tries
Try
hard.
Courtney.
Yeah. So maybe, I guess, Rennie Harlan is the Jai Courtney of directors.
That's probably...
Which is, I hate to say.
Yeah. I don't think we're going to be naming an award after him anytime soon. But I will give this movie credit for some things. I kind of like the setup. If a group of scientists genetically engineer this shark to harvest its brain juice to cure Alzheimer's.
Inside this movie, there is a really, really good movie.
There's a better
somewhere,
movie.
Somewhere.
In that shark's brain.
The setup is great. You open with your Jurassic Park tease, which lets you know, like, oh, we're going to have some exposition. You gave us the goods. Now mm-hmm. we have to wait.
Right.
Which introduces the shark and introduces Thomas Jane as the superhero-like figure.
And he's a good shot with that harpoon gun.
Yeah, so you know what you're getting. And then the setup is decent. It makes you think of, like, classic isolation movies, like Alien.
Abyss.
The Thing. Deep Star 6. These great,
yes,
iconic...
those classic
iconic
films.
Movies where it's like, okay, we're meeting everybody. So these people matter. Then they just don't.
Like, yeah. To go back to the Alzheimer's thing, and specifically...
It's a great setup.
Yeah, it's a
Why
great
are you
setup.
Genetically altering sharks? To cure Alzheimer's.
Which was done... a couple years ago, we'll talk about it more in a couple weeks when we do our Planet of the Apes episode. That was the reason behind Caesar in Rise of the Planet of the Apes, was James Franco was trying to cure his dad, cure his Alzheimer's, so they were using what was already a very smart creature. You mentioned Jurassic Park. This movie, I think, is super, well, I would argue that Jurassic World borrows a shit ton from this movie. They genetically engineered an already smart dinosaur, made him even smarter. You got your Chris Pratt, who's the raptor whisperer. Yeah. Thomas Jane is the shark wrangler.
Saffron Burroughs is right. Uptight.
She's just not wearing high heels. That is the only difference between her and Bryce Dallas Howard. Well, there is a slight difference between those two characters. One of them seems to fare a little bit better than the other in the end. But like you said, there are parts of this movie I think are actually pretty good. The setup is one of them. It just kind of gets lost in some of the noise.
Yeah, because like you get Stellan Skarsgård as this like super genius spearheading the thing.
Bit of a mad scientist.
The little blonde lady is like worships him and is just excited to be there. Thomas Jane has a history, which they like mention once and then it never goes back to.
Yeah, Samuel Jackson mentions it and then
Sammy Jackson has like a cool history. Like he survived an avalanche and now he's a millionaire.
And
like,
let me tell you about it.
Yeah, like Saffron Burroughs is just this, the dynamic between her and Thomas Jane, it's like they pulled from five different scripts. And then we haven't mentioned LL Cool J yet.
Not yet. I'm saving a special section.
Yeah.
For...
But like the only one that really doesn't get set up is, what's her name, Janice or Janet?
The little blonde girl?
No, well, she too, but...
The air traffic control lady.
The one in the...
Yeah, that gets blasted in the helicopter crash, which looks like it should be out of Die Hard.
Yeah.
Does not seem to fit in a horror movie, an action stunt of that magnitude, but you know what? That was a good helicopter crash, as far as helicopter crashes go.
And it was a cool setup. The thing is, the effects in this movie are terrible. So even the cool stuff, you have to take it with a grain of salt. I like the helicopter trying to lift Stellan Skarsgård mm-hmm. and then dropping him in the water. That's a great setup. Like, I think that's a great horror movie moment.
And then basically
and then
hooking a fish.
Explode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and taking out the entirety of the base. But you mentioned that there are a lot of different movies going on. And I think that it makes the movie uneven. It seems like someone forgot to tell LL Cool J that this movie wasn't a comedy. And his scenes, for the most part, they all play that way. But I don't blame him.
They're
He's just
embarrassing. Like, I like LL Cool J.
Right.
I like LL Cool J on screen. I think he has this charm and charisma. None of it's there. It's embarrassing watching him in this movie. And I hate saying that because, like, he's a good enough actor. He's carried movies. And he's by far the weakest point of a bad movie because every scene he's in is pretty bad. And to make him act with that bird.
The bird's awful. The videotape where he starts talking about the omelet.
I felt bad for him.
Yeah.
I really did.
Yeah. He, on the one hand, seemed very stereotypical for an African-American character in a horror movie. Like, oh, he has to be the comedic relief because there's no other reason he'd be around. He even kind of mentions it like, you know, brothers don't survive this. Not ever. So his character seemed very out of place when the rest of the cast, like your other two leads, basically, are taking the movie so seriously. LL Cool J basically had, they feel like they had to have laughs. So every one of them will give to the cook because we can't give any to these other two characters that are playing it like, I would say like Casper Van Dien syndrome, where you think that people forgot to let him in on the joke of Starship Troopers actually being kind of a ridiculous movie. He's playing it like he's trying to get an Oscar. I think these two kind of are doing the same thing.
LL Cool J is isolated for most of it. Like, right. He's by himself.
His movie's a comedy.
Yeah, and every line he delivers, it's just like, really?
But I actually do like his character.
I like the idea, like, he's a chef. I like
he's
that.
The everyman. He's not a scientist. No. He's not a shark wrangler. He's just the next cook in a long line of cooks on the high seas saving everybody's ass.
Yeah, I like him, but he was done so poorly.
I feel like it's impossible to talk about this movie with you and not mention Samuel L. Jackson specifically. I think by now, 18 years worth of pop culture have probably wrecked his death scene. But before that, he's pretty understated as far as Samuel L. Jackson goes. He's the clear-thinking one who's not yelling. And it's only when we start to see hints of the Samuel L. Jackson that we all know and love, that's when he gets eaten by a motherfucking shark.
Out of nowhere. And it's one of my favorite. It looks so bad, though. This is what I mean about the effects. You can find his death scene on YouTube if you haven't seen it. It's one of the greatest.
Or just wait for your birthday and Dave will post it for you.
It's one of the greatest movie deaths ever because at that point, you don't really see it coming. Like, it's telegraphed a mile away.
Yes. Well, I wouldn't stand there.
Watching it again, it's like, yeah, you should have seen that coming. But I guess you just don't imagine Sammy Jackson going that way.
I think in the moment you're thinking that he might be one of the ones that gets out of this. He's the biggest
survived
name.
It before, yeah.
Right, biggest name out of all of them. He seems to be the one that's got his head together, which is usually a pretty good sign.
Yeah, but what he said makes a point. Like, I like the speech there. Seven of us survived, only five came out alive, or something like that. And like, you look at movies like The Thing. It's not just the alien.
It's people turning on each other.
People
yeah.
turning on each other. Miguel Ferrer in Deep Star 6, where he's as much of a threat as the monster. And you don't have that in these. And I think in like great isolationist movies, you need that conflict that comes from other than the threat.
Or just that one slightly below Deep Star 6 in terms of classics, you know, Ash in Alien, who actually tries to kill Ripley as well as the monster running around. Yeah.
Yeah.
Although he's not a human, but you don't know that at the time.
Yeah, there's that extra element of,
as if the sharks weren't bad enough.
Yeah, but there's none of that in this movie. It's like, oh, they argue and bicker a little bit at first, and then they just get along.
He kind of teases it. Like, he gets you ready for, you know, Michael Rapaport having a complete meltdown. Yeah. And being somewhat of a liability, but I don't know, maybe he snapped him out of it by his noble sacrifice. He forged them into the team that they would be.
Because, like, even when he disagrees later, like, oh, I'm not swimming. Well, it's our only way. All right. Like, there's no, like, there's no conflict. There's nobody going out thinking they can do it on their own. Like, it's just, even Wayne Knight in Jurassic Park, like, he goes off on his own.
Right.
Like, obviously, that was before everything happened, but there's a good movie in here somewhere.
I guess the closest thing to something like Wayne Knight would be when Saffron Burroughs breaks away to try and save her research data, which on the one hand, it's tough because, like, her character, you can't put her as materialistic. It's not like she was necessarily trying to just make a ton of money with this research. It was obviously something that in her very first scene, she's very passionate about. So,
oh, yeah.
She says, well, if we don't get this research, everybody's dying was completely worthless, which on the one hand, I guess you kind of see it. These people are dead, so you might as well try and save the research. So they died for something. And she goes back, which is somewhat selfish, but she goes by herself and manages to take out one of the sharks.
So she electrocutes the one.
Yes.
LL Cool J blew the other one up.
Yes.
And then they explode the big one at the end.
Yeah, I guess technically LL Cool J takes out two of the three of the sharks.
Yeah.
And I believe Mythbusters had an episode where they were trying to debunk the last shark kill, the one with the gunpowder and the bolt. I believe they came to the conclusion most of that would not have worked.
No.
No, I don't think so.
No.
I'm not sure if they actually shot.
I don't think most of this movie somebody would work.
I was starting to try and write down, like when we did a Jurassic Park episode way back in the day, I was like, all right, well, let me find five things that science doesn't make sense in this movie. And then I was like, all right, well,
no,
I literally got to the boat scene when the wine spilled in the water. And I was like, you know, I don't think the sharks are going to give a shit about that. But then I started to think it's not so much that they think it's blood. It's just the representation. It's blood is in the water. It's just that, you know, and I started giving the movie way too much credit and thinking that it's only 2 minutes in and I've already got at least one thing I think is wrong. I should probably not try and do this.
Now, I like the idea, though. I do like that sharks are like the only animals that haven't evolved because they're such a good.
They were
like,
perfect to start with.
They're survivors. They haven't had to evolve.
Yeah, they don't get blind.
So you make them
stuff
stronger.
Yes.
You make them smarter. And I like the little stuff. Like he pulls out the gun and they swim away and just Sammy Jackson's reaction and just everything. Like Jurassic Park, the raptors steal the show because they open the door. They trap the hunter. Clever girl. Like they're not just an animal. And that's what the sharks are. And even at the end, Tommy Jane, it's like, oh, everything has been planned. Like, they just want over those fences. And, like, we've given them what they need to get over. So,
right. What does the world's smartest shark think about?
Freedom. Like, right. It just wants out in the ocean. And I like that idea. I like the idea. It's different than Jaws. It's Jaws and Alien in a perfect world if it was executed. It's this combination of two iconic movies. Just not executed properly.
It is not executed maybe as well as certainly some of those other classics you mentioned, such as Deep Star 6. But with that being said, I mean, I think it's an enjoyable movie. It doesn't necessarily tether itself to one particular genre. It allows the movie to kind of suck in all the areas.
Yeah, like I feel like it's more of an action movie than anything.
Probably, yeah.
I think that's where it fails, is it's set up like a great horror movie.
Yeah. And then becomes more of an action movie, but not enough of an action movie to be a good action movie. But at the end of the day, I mean, I think it can still entertain you for, you know, an hour and a half of mindless fun. And I kind of think that's what, to bring it back to Rennie Harlan, like that's what he does. He can entertain you with a couple hours of mindless fun. And for a movie about super smart animals, it's not exactly a super smart movie.
No.
It's just kind of like a fun
popcorn
summer movie. But not to go too deep into the shark genre, what I really enjoy about movies like that, like Jaws or Deep Blue Sea or even The Shallows, is that we as humans are in their element. It's a home game for the sharks. The environment alone could kill a human, much less the 26-foot-long killer lurking just below the surface. I mean, it's not like you've got a shark movie where they're in a supermarket or something, which is like our territory. That wouldn't be nearly as scary. But I like the fact that it was somewhat environmental. Like, yes, the sharks were there, but the possibility of them drowning was just as likely as getting eaten by a shark.
Yeah, and that's why I like Alien, The Thing, and Deep Star 6. Like, three or four people die that have nothing to do with the monster. And that's why I like these isolationist-type movies, because there are so many things that can go wrong, and it just ignores all that. And the deaths didn't matter. Even at the end, like Saffron Burroughs, like, whatever, like, she's gone. The only one is, like, Michael Rapaport, where LL Cool J is like, he was a good guy. That's it. Everybody else, the blonde went nuts when Stellan Skarsgård comes through the window.
Yeah.
But nobody cares about anything.
No, because
they live underwater. They're essentially on a spaceship. Like, these are the people
that
they're
with. But they're not that close.
Yeah, and I just don't like that. Like, it was set up like, oh, we're getting to know these people. It's going to matter when they die, and then it just doesn't.
It maybe matters to one that a different one has died, but that's where a movie like that does go wrong. Not to keep bringing it back to Alien, because that's really unfair to Deep Blue Sea, but when those characters die, they all, like, when the captain, when Dallas is in the air duct trying to get the alien, like, you hear Veronica Cartwright just screaming at him, like, to get the hell out of there. They generally did have concern for each other. In this movie, it almost seems like when the sharks died, that was more of a bummer. Really, when the sharks' death scenes were cooler, I mean, they were all bad CGI, but at least stuff was blowing up.
Yeah.
Big blood ring.
Like Tremors. Like, Tremors was a cool movie because there were only a couple of them, and so they made those kills cool. But, like, even Severin Burroughs, like, after it attacks the arm and Tommy Jane's trying to shoot it, like, she lets it go, and it's like, oh, she's setting up to be a villain. And then, is she the villain? Is she the love interest? She's neither.
Is she sympathetic?
Like, there's nothing.
There was something, like, dickish, even when Stellan Skarsgård died. You know, he talks about, like, oh, yeah, I violated the whatever pact on you. I don't care. So he's kind of a dick. So when he dies, you don't feel bad. Like, yeah, that's what you get. Frankenstein getting, you know, killed by your own monster. You mentioned Saffron Burroughs was really kind of pushing that. So by the end, when she sort of, like, tries to sacrifice herself, or I don't know if you're supposed to feel bad for her. I don't know if I feel bad for any of these people. I kind of didn't, except for the lady, the really spunky lady,
the Janice or whatever.
Yeah, whatever her name was.
I don't even
know
if her name. She looked like a Janice.
Yeah, she could have been. She was a real ball of fire, no pun intended. But when movies,
Brenda, yeah, Ada Turturro too. Like,
pour one out for Brenda. When these movies do it well, and we tend to mention Neil Marshall movies in this context a lot, he does a good job of making sure that the deaths matter. And in this movie, I mean, realistically, when they show the amount of survivors that are down there, I mean, you can do the math. You know that they're not all making it out. Yeah. Some of them are going to die. But at no point, I think, really outside of Samuel L. Jackson, are you taken by surprise when any of them die?
I mean, obviously, Tommy Jane, you know, is going to make it.
Yes.
And I think you assume Saffron Burroughs.
Yeah. I think realistically, you would assume that. And you would assume that LL Cool J is going to get oh so close. And then when he gets eaten by the shark at the end, you think, oh, yep, that's going to be it. But if anything, I guess we can tip our cap to Deep Blue Sea for defying movie convention and saying, you know what? I don't have to be a bad action movie. I don't have to be a bad horror movie. I can do bad at both, and I can break horror movie conventions by allowing one of our African-American characters to make it to the end. If for no other reason than to be able to sing the credits song.
This is my exact reaction is like, the whole time, LL Cool J is the worst part of this movie. And then the camera pans out when they're there at the end and you see the boat coming. And then the credit song comes on and it's like, oh, LL Cool J saved this movie. Like, he is the best part about this movie.
Clearly, if they make the chef character die, then instead of the joy that is My Hat is Like a Shark Fin, then we're just left with kind of like a remembrance of that character. And you kind of just kind of feel sad. It brings you to place of regret as opposed to a place of rejoice.
It reads as poetry too. The deepest bluest, the lyrics of it, the first verse is rapped from the point of view of the shark, kind of. I'll pause your breaths, I cause you to sink 40,000 leagues, bleeding to death with no arms and short sleeves. My world's deep blue, killer's gotta eat too. Looking for human flesh to rip my teeth through. Other fish in the sea, but barracudas ain't equal to a half-human predator created by a needle. It's an insane song. Like, it's one of the craziest credit songs. Like,
and I do love those credit songs that, like, summarize the movie you just watched. Yeah. Yes, like, in case you didn't catch it, here's what you just witnessed through, like, Deep Blue Sea.
And I mean, I love LL Cool J. I used to love this song ironically, but, like, I love his verses on this. Like, they're nonsensical, but I really like LL Cool J. Struggling to flow with hemorrhages in your throat. Getting the lap dance while I smash through your boat. Eat your whole fam, nothing left but a right hand. Clinging to a rail, escape, attempts fail. It's insane, the whole song. Gotti of the Deep. I love it. And yes, I'm looking at screenshots of the lyrics on my phone.
Of course, yes.
Because I have them pulled up.
Because they're always on your phone, ready to go. For whenever the situation arises. Next week, the situation will arise wherein we will run down our top five Keanu Reeves movies of all time. The Bad Batch out next week, which stars Keanu Reeves, Jason Momoa, Jim Carrey.
Ladies, yeah.
It has a very strange cast from the director that did A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. So that movie finally releases, and we thought it would be a decent time, if not now, when, to do our five favorite Keanu Reeves films. And we'll follow that up the week after that with our five favorite movies about gambling. Will Ferrell has
Amy Poehler, and Jason Poehler Mantzoukas.
The House. Jeremy Renner, The House comes out that week. The week after that, it is halftime. So,
yay, it's one of my favorite episodes of the
year. Yeah, perhaps we'll be talking about The Bad Batch, perhaps The House. Certainly some movies.
I'm not going to see either of those.
You talked about the summer not being great. The first probably 3 months of this year, fantastic
yeah.
movies.
And not
what's
even,
normally a dumping ground, fantastic.
Not even like only theatrically. Netflix had some good stuff. This year is huge for movies going.
Sandy Wexler, of course, of What You Speak.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. The Adam Sandler one. Mm-hmm. Movie of the year by the end of the year. But I mean, this year, like, it'll probably be our first year where, like, I have movies that went straight to Netflix on my end of the year list because there's already been some good ones and there's more coming out. So
that's what we've got coming up for the next 3 weeks. Keanu Reeves' favorite gambling movies in the halftime show. But until then, stay out of the water and
keep it up. With no arms and short sleeves. My world's deep blue. Killers gotta eat too. Looking for human flesh to rip my teeth through. Other fish in the sea, but barracudas ain't equal to a half-human predator created by a needle. Jet black eyes, baby, they stare while you sleep. When your Titanic sink, I'm the one you gon' meet. Hearing terrified screams, they so